All right. Joe Conroy, alcoholic.
Thank you guys for being here, and thank you, June and Jimmy, for setting such a low bar. My God. I was like, I don't want to go up there now. I can't do this stuff. But I love these two steps. I'm like, you know, I want to thank Joan for being here. But, you know, I want to tell you a story. About 4 months ago, I was up in L.A. giving a talk, and I called a friend of mine. He says, hey, I'm going to be up there. You want to have dinner? He said, sure. So we brought a newcomer with him. And the guy was just getting sober. And you got a phone number? Well, I don't have a phone number. I don't have a phone yet. I won't have it for a while. And, you know, yeah, sure. I'll never get his phone number. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, he texted me. He says, I've got a phone. And we're coming down to the workshop. I said, would you like to be of service? He said, sure. So Jack signed a lot of you folks in with 4 months today. So I really just... It's just amazing, and this is really like what Pam was talking about. This is what we do. This is, you know, it's not necessarily what you do, it's what we do. It says, we want to invite you into Alcoholics Anonymous, because this is a scary place for everybody, and this is where we come in here with broken emotions. And, you know, everybody always talks about, we don't talk about feelings in here. And I go, where do they get that? That's all it's talk about in the big book, you know. And we heard what June and Jimmy were talking about, and this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body that I came in here with, broken. And it lasted for years in sobriety. You can get physically sober and be emotionally unsober. Tom Brady Jr. used to call it inebriety, which is the obsession of just stuff. Inebriety, not sobriety, inebriety, you know, and that spiritual sobriety that we get, we talked about in the first four steps up to working up to this stuff, this emotional sobriety, this sixth and the seventh step. I used to come to this meeting on Saturday night, and literally for the first 3 years of my sobriety, hated every Saturday night, and my sponsor used to sit me right there in front of the podium, and it was just miserable, and I used to hear these wonderful speakers, you know, they were wonderful to you guys, they weren't to me. I was just so, I didn't know I was so broken. I didn't know that's what this uncovering, discovering, and discarding the old ideas, that's what everybody's talking about today. These are huge. The way I came in here and held on, clinged to my seemingly hopeless state, my cling to my old ideas. And if you cling, you're bound to them. And I think that's what we do in here. We release this bondage of self by doing the inventory that Jimmy just talked about, but getting the first three steps into our soul, you know, this journey from the head to the heart is like the longest trip any of us can ever make. But we think it's a physical trip. It really isn't. It's a spiritual and emotional trip. And it happens one alcoholic at a time, one person reaching out. When Jimmy was talking about coming to these meetings, when he said, become the greeter, oh, if somebody ever told me to become the greeter when I was new, I would have walked away from sobriety. I would have walked away because I still to this day don't like greeters because it's just an old idea, you know. And I've been 35 years sober. I got sober on January 1st, 1989. I took my last drink right downtown. Thank you. Right downtown San Diego. And I didn't know what a last drink was. I didn't know any of this stuff. But I didn't. The thing was is that the people that you guys were talking about, the people that influence our early sobriety, they're the foundation. They're the rocket, the fuel for this rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. They're the people that keep us on track, keep us on the beam, get us on the beam. And the guy that actually sponsored me didn't sponsor. The guy that gave me this message the first time I was sober, I tended bar in Boston for years. And I liked this guy, was just a moron. I was at a comedy club, and I couldn't stand this guy. And I just thought he was just stupid, but he was a sober member of AA. If you're a bartender in a big city, you run into a lot of alcoholics. And you're not one. But this guy was a sober member of AA. And when you're dealing with alcoholics morning, noon, and light, and this sober member of AA comes in, and he's a moron. I have to tell you, I didn't like this guy, but he was smiling all the time. There was nothing attractive about him. There was something attractive about his presence, though, if you can understand that. And I think that's what happens in here. And I think that's why the greeters at the front door are so important. When I remember used to come to this meeting, all the greeters would be 20 of them. There could have been two, but your mind just kind of magnifies everything that Dr. Paul used to say. And then I used to come in either that door or I'd come in this door over here because there was no greeters over here. You know. But I didn't know that was fear. 100 forms of fear and self-delusion. It's amazing what fear will do for you. It'll keep you in that bondage. It'll keep us in this state of uncomfortability. And when we do that fourth column, when we do that fifth step, it's more for me. It's about that fifth step when my sponsor, the intimacy that I've developed over time. And I think that's a really important thing. Jimmy tapped on that, the intimacy that developed. You don't know the first person you ask to help you. You don't know what's going to happen. And I remember the first person was Eugene, and that relationship didn't last. But he gave me the foundation. He gave me the foundation, and that was getting in the car, coming here, sit down, shut up, and listen. And there was one night, I'm sitting there, there's a woman speaking. God, it might have been June. It might have been you. I don't know. I probably wasn't, you know, but I'm sitting in that front and I'm fidgety and I'm like, I can't stand being here. And he said, will you sit on your hands and relax? I'm tore up. And she said, she says, I've struggled with the concept of God for years. And I went, here we go. Here it is, the God. Then they're going to pass the basket. Then they're going to want the money, you know. And I was like, my mind, like you were talking to me, my mind was already into the future. I'm like, oh, I can't hear whatever she's going to say. And Eugene's going, will you stop fishing? I couldn't. And then she said, if I'm trying to figure this out, I'm not living in faith. And I literally felt this, boom. I felt this from the head. And I said, did you hear that? And he said, shut up. And I go, did you hear what she said? And it was the solution to the problem that I didn't even know I had. I am a figure outer. I am a figure. We were talking about her first sponsor, and her husband was my best pal, Michael Patrick Fitch, who actually used to come here all the time with us. He died of Lou Gehrig's disease at 32 years old. But he was one of these guys that used to say, I guts to know. He had to know what everything was going on. It was just crazy. And I think that's why, when this woman said, if I'm trying to figure it out, I'm not living in faith. And then I started working on that inventory process. The first one I did was terrible because I couldn't really read. I was afraid. The pride was in the way. I couldn't tell anybody. I had a really hard time reading. I can't comprehend anything. I'm stuck. And when I went over to Eugene's house, he says, I want you to read How It Works to me before we have dinner. And I go, well, where's the piece of paper? He said, what piece of paper? He said, the piece of paper that everybody reads How It Works off of. He goes, it's in the book. I said, what book? He said, the big book. I said, it's in the book. He said, everybody reads it off a piece of paper. I go, I know. He says, and from now on, if you ever go to a meeting and they ask you to read How It Works, I want you to pick up the book and read it, not the piece of paper, because most people don't even realize that it comes from the book that we don't read. But then I said the words, Eugene, I have a really hard time reading. I can't read very well, I'm afraid. And he said, all right, call me tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock, and we'll read one page of the big book together. Oh, I don't get up at 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock. And I called him at 6:10 or something, and he hung up the phone as he was saying, 6 o'clock tomorrow morning, click. And they did it the next morning, and then we started going through the big book one page at a time. I was embarrassed by it. I was embarrassed. My pride was leading. So pride, anger, greed, gluttony, envy, lust, and sloth. These are the seven deadly sins that it talks about in here, you know, and it talks about in the 12 and 12. But this sixth and the seventh step, I was so enamored with this stuff. And I would hear everybody talk about, oh, I'm on the emotional roller coaster, or I'm on the seesaw, the emotional seesaw. My life is crazy. I can't do anything about it. And this one night he said, I want you to do this. I want you, you're Catholic, right? There's a lot of Catholics in here. And he said, I want you to get up on the cross. What do you mean? I said, just stand there and get up on the cross. And just stand there like this, you're on the cross. Just like this. And it's, oh, yeah, oh, I feel, you know, oh, yeah, I get it now. And he goes, now I want you to number the steps on your arms. And I said, what? He says, just go to number one, number two, number three, number four, number five, number six, number seven, eight, nine, ten. And I did that. And he goes, what's in between step six and seven? And I went, oh, my God. He goes, there it is. There's the problem. There's the problem right there, Joe. This is it. This is the problem that we're working with. And then he said, if you can picture this seesaw, he said, right in the middle of a seesaw is a fulcrum. And he says, that's what the step six and seven, that's why they're numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Right in the middle is this fulcrum. And that's what the 12 steps help you do, is find the balance, the emotional balance. When you do that inventory process with your sponsor, and I do this with most of the guys. I says, I want you to leave that fourth column blank until we sit down and do the fifth step. I want to walk through this. I want you to tell me what you think your defects of character are. And then I might have to change it a little bit and kind of point you in and take that little direction that you need. Just that there's one thing about the sponsorship relationship, this intimacy, that I will try to cover up a lot of insecurities, I'll try to make them bigger. I'll try to make them not as bad. But your sponsor doesn't have that bias. He's going to go, okay, you got to look at it like this. And 100 forms of fear and self-delusion. And he says, what I want you to do is get a dictionary, and I want you to have a thesaurus, and I want you to really understand what these words that Bill is talking about really mean. I want you to describe to me what they are first. Then I want you to get a dictionary, and I want you to get the dictionary version of what that is. And he says, and when we work on that seventh step, I want you to get the opposite of the word. And it's going to be, as the 12 and 12 says, it's going to be, we're not striving for perfection, we're striving for a perfect ideal, which is of God. Which is of God, not the God, is of God, is this perfect ideal. And I go, what is that? And he goes, now we're going to, let me open up the 12 and 12. And he says, one of the first lines in the sixth step, it says, this is the beginning of a lifetime process. What, are you kidding me? He goes, I'm telling you. You're going to continually uncover, discover, and discard these old ideas that keeping you in bondage. It's not them that are keeping you in bondage. It's your old ideas. It's when you were talking about the joy of living is our code, but action is the key word, is the first line in the 12th step in the 12 and 12. The joy of living is our code, but action is the key word. Not reaction, not inaction. Story of my life is reaction. Just get me behind the wheel of a car. Oh, I can see you coming to cut me off long before you've made the decision to cut me off. I can see it happening. And I go, slowly start speeding up the car to cut down the range so you can't get in front of me. And then you try to get in front of me, and then the finger goes up, and then I'm blaming you for my seemingly hopeless state of mind about you piece of blah, blah, blah. It just gives me a feeling of superiority. That's what the seventh step talks about. All these old ideas give me a feeling of superiority. And when I have a feeling of superiority, I'm separating me from you, and then I'm separating you from God, me from God. And I'm disconnected from that power, literally, figuratively, and spiritually disconnected. And then Eugene used to say, Joe, the reason why those people are at the front door to greet you at the meeting so they can give you a physical connection to a spiritual program. Said there's something really spiritual about somebody reaching out and giving you a hug or touching you or shaking your hand. Something happens in there. We don't know what it is. It is not magic. I think a lot of people talk about the fellowship and the program of being magic. It is the most mysterious thing I've ever seen in my life. The age of miracles. A miracle is mysterious. It's something that you don't really believe happened, but it happened. What do you mean he's sober? He's sober. I remember going back home to Boston, and I saw a buddy of mine who just got out of 12 years in jail. 12 years in jail, and he was at an AA meeting. He had like 3 or 4 months sober. And I had 13 or 14 years sober. And he goes, how long have you been around? I said, 13 or 14, whatever it was. And he goes, no way. I went, what do you mean, no way? No way you're sober. I'm like, you just got out of jail for drinking, right? And there was you're sober, but not you. I go, wow, nobody in AA has ever said that to me. Nobody has ever said you don't belong. My head has said I don't belong. It said it earlier. After having hearing June and Jimmy talk, I go, I got to go home. I wish I had an appendicitis attack right now. I could go home. Just magic magnifying mind, Dr. Paul talks about. It's like, these are the ideas that will keep us in bondage of self. It's just amazing how the mind just works. Oh, God, I wish the lights would go out. You know? And he started talking about the spotlight of the spirit. You know what mine did? My mind did? It started counting the spotlights. How many are up there? Wow, there's a lot, and there are a lot, you know? But this sixth and seventh step, boy, I'll tell you what, if you're struggling, because most people really don't look much at it. Let me just go back to the big book where it says, you know, there's two paragraphs. Everybody says, oh, there's only two paragraphs in the big book. It can't be very much. It can't be very much. Is it very much? It can't be very much. But there are two paragraphs. And they're really both sides of each. So in step six, if we can answer to our satisfaction, the satisfaction that Jimmy talked about, returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. Be quiet for an hour? What do you mean be quiet? Like, be quiet. You mean like quiet? Yeah, sleep? No, quiet. Quiet, Joe. For an hour? Oh my God, you got to be, that's a lot. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. We didn't know him before. And all of a sudden we did this work. You know, it says deep down inside every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. I love that word fundamental now. I hated it before. Years ago when I first got sober, because fundamentalism is it's a negative word. You hear it all over the news. Everybody's a fundamentalist. They're fundamentalists. They're fundamentalists. I go, and I remember talking to Eugene, I don't like fundamentalists. Why? He says, because of the word. He says, well, break the word down. He says, break it down. It says fundamental. He says, break it down. He says, it's fun, which is wonderful. But he said, in your case, it's demental. Ooh. But it really, and there's this subtle love that these people give us. Oh, it really isn't about them. No, it's the mental obsession that you have that you're going to try to control and enjoy their thinking. Their thinking, that's an old idea. Oh my God, and it says, taking this book down from the shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 proposals, which are our 12 steps. And this is the promise that I love. Carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we ask as if we admitted anything. If you've heard a fifth step, you know probably the last question that you're going to ask, if it's your first fifth step you're hearing, the last question you're going to ask is, have you admitted anything? And you will probably never ask that question last again, because you'll ask that first. Because when we go, is there anything that you admitted, it's usually going to be, yeah, ah, dang, I didn't want to talk about this one. I didn't even write it down. And then they give you that secret. They give you that nugget. They give you that thing that they're going to take to the grave. And they're free, and you're free. And I go, wow, okay, this is done. And then the next time you hear a fifth step, you go, hey, I know you did all that writing. Is there anything that you didn't write that you want to tell me about first? And they're going to go, yeah, I do, yeah, okay. So anyway, you can shall walk a free man. But this sixth step, it says, we have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove all these things which we admit are objectionable? We did the inventory. I know what my four-step inventory was long before I put it down on a piece of paper. Everybody goes, I'm so afraid to write the four-step. Well, why? Because I'm going to have to tell the fifth step. Oh, then you're afraid of telling the fifth step. Well, I guess I am. Yeah, because you perfectly know. You know what's in that fourth step. You know it. It's here. What we're doing is getting it down on a piece of paper so you can actually help somebody analyze and what your fifth, your fourth column is, what your character defect, what is that old idea that you can take to God and say, give me a new idea. What is it? What is it? And this is the growing up process. That's what it is. You know, we are little kids with big people's shoes when we get here. Think about it. We're just clumsy. We're walking around, falling into things, and all of a sudden, slowly over time, we start fitting into our skin, and it's like, oh my God. Can he take them out, every one of them? If we cling to something we will not let go of, we ask God to help us be willing. Those who cling are bound. Think about it. If you're clinging to something you won't let go of, just say, God, help me remove this. Remove this so I can be a free man. And when I'm ready, I say something like this, my creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. All of me. All of me, good and bad. I pray that you remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out here to do your bidding. We have then completed step 7. 2 paragraphs. Very, grant me strength as I go out here to what bidding? You want me to go bidding? No, I want you to be in the big book, they talk about prospects. They don't mention the word sponsor at all. They call these sponsees prospects. And think about it. If you're a prospector, you're hunting for a nugget. You're hunting for a piece of gold. You're seeking something precious. And there's something incredibly beautiful about the being of maximum service to people in here. And that's not the way I was. When I was sitting in that front row over here, just angry and just frustrated and just sad, my life was nothing. I hated everything and everybody. I had 5 brothers, and I thought they all had it together. I found my dad dead in bed when I was 13 years old. And I remember falling into the priest's arms. And the priest said, Joe, it's going to be okay. You don't have to cry. Just go out and deliver the papers. It's going to be okay. It's not okay. Like you were talking about, Jimmy, they don't, even priests don't want to feel emotions. That's why they sit in a confessional with a blind between us. So we don't have to look you in the eye and go, wow, you're hurting, aren't you? Yeah, I'm hurting. I'm hurting. And it took me years into sobriety to deal with that loss in my life. And it was grief that I was holding on to. I was clinging to grief. And so many guys in sobriety, women too, cling to grief. No, you don't understand. And your sponsor says, help me understand. Please talk about what you're feeling. Talk about this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And if the main problem centers in my mind and in the alcoholic's mind, I can't be free of my old ideas. And then all of a sudden you sit down and do the 6 and 7 step with the lifetime process. It's a long time. Even in the 12 and 12 and the 4th step, it says it's a lifetime process. Sometimes people go, oh, it's one and done. I don't have to ever do this again. You do. You're going to be faced with indecision. You're going to be faced with this 100 forms. That's a lot of fear and self-delusion. And they block me from the sunlight of the Spirit. The sun, like you were saying, the sunlight helps us grow. You know, a lot of times, oh, we're speaking up here today. I always say, this is the spotlight of the Spirit that I'm doing right now. This isn't the sunlight of the Spirit. You know, this is, when that spotlight goes out, I have to be able to walk away as free as I am at this moment. And if I'm living for the accolade of attaboys and all that sort of stuff, I'm not living in emotional sobriety. I'm not living in the now. I'm not living in the present moment. I'm seeking. I'm expecting something other than I'm making demands upon you that you can never fulfill. Oh, my God, just think about that 2-year-old kid in the kitchen. Like, I want it now. That's what we are. If we're emotionally unsober, we're so afraid that we're not going to get what we want or lose what we have. And that pride that leads the list is incredible. In my own experience, this happened. Now, I'm sober 35 years. So this is about, my mom passed away about 6 years ago, I think. And I had lost the job, a great job, high-paying job, lost it. Complained about it for years to my sponsor. Complained about it. And I'll never forget, when I called him, I said, you want to know what happened? And he said, what? I said, they got rid of me today. And he said, this is where sponsors are kind of mean. He said, well, you've been complaining about that job for about 5 years. Looks like God did for you what you couldn't do for yourself. Wow. Well, how am I going to survive? I immediately went into the future. You know, my 401k wasn't even big enough yet. I didn't have any investment, nothing. It was just, oh, my God, how am I going to survive? I don't know. He says, I don't know. 3 weeks later, I'm in the hospital. Heart blew out. Oh, my God. What am I going to do? Oh, my God. And then I was like, no, I can't go back to it. I'm 62 years old. Nobody's going to hire a broken down whack job like me. I'm like, oh, my God. And I'm in debt. I didn't talk about that. I'm in debt. You know? Well, they gave me the credit card. What's in your wallet? You know what I mean? They gave me the credit card, and I maxed it out. All of them. All of them. And I was like, And I remember I said, I said to Ken, I says, I got to write an inventory. I'm going out to Palm Springs. I went out to Palm Springs and I took the 12 and 12 and I did an inventory out of the 28 questions in the 12 and 12. They talk about finances, romances, and you know, sexual stuff. Anyway, it was on the finances and I was so prideful. I remember I called him up when I'm coming back from, and I said, Ken, I'm done. I need to dump this right away. We sat down. I was so ashamed of where I had put myself financially. And we did the inventory, and he said, wow, good. What? This is bad. He said, no, it's good that you told me about this. He says, now we can tackle the problem. It's, well, yeah, how? I can't ever pay this back. Now, I'm not working. And he goes, well, that's one little bill at a time. What? That's a big amount of money, one little thing at a time. And then roll it into the next one. Ken, it's impossible. Start here now. And then we've got that first, what do you call it? The stimulus check. When COVID first started, we got the first stimulus check. I paid off my last debt. And I was like, I'm not even working. But I made a decision, and I followed through with the decision. Not only decision, but I had to get rid of my pride and say, this is where I'm in trouble. I'm afraid. I'm afraid to talk about it. And I'll tell you what, I've been talking about it in meetings ever since. And you want to know something? Everybody goes, oh, wow. I am so glad you talked about that. Because I've been trying to keep up with the Joneses ever since I got sober. Envy and jealousy are huge defects of character. Huge. Jealousy is when I tell you I just bought a brand new F-150 Lariat Ford pickup truck. Jealousy is when I pull up to the meeting with it and I pull right next to your little piece of crap car. And you got to go, oh my God, how much did that car? I go, well, it's only blah, blah, blah a month. But only blah, blah, blah a month piles up. You know, the piles get higher and the piles, if all you're doing is piling your defects of character, all you're going to see is the pile. You'll never be able to see the solution. And if you don't talk about it, that solution will never come into your fruition. This is what it's all about. It's really this wonderful way of life. The problem with the sixth and seventh step is it takes a lifetime. But then your sponsor goes, but we only have right now. Yeah, but they just said in the big book, in the 12 and 12, it takes a lifetime, but a lifetime, it's right here, right now. It's it. Lifetime, it's done. It's it. What can you concentrate on right here and right in front of you? I go, oh my God. So then I dig into this. I'm not going to dig all the way in, but I love step six and seven in the 12 and 12 because it's just an amazing stuff, you know. And the first line of the step six is this is the step that separates the men from the boys. Every once in a while, I want to change the words because for me, I said this is the step that separates the mature from the immature. Think about that. We're seeking emotional sobriety. The men from the boys separates a lot of women, right? You know, but the mature from the immature. It's like, oh my God, I want to be mature without any reservations, whatever, to set free of myself so I can be rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. Oh, Ken, where is that? Is that up in the top of the hill in La Jolla? Sorry, Joe. No, it's right here and right now. You got to be kidding me. He gives me a new idea. My old idea is it has to be something material to make me feel better. Fill in the blank of what material is. It can be money, women, men, cars, job, but it's the spiritual. If I suffered from a material malady, material things would take the malady away. I suffer from a spiritual malady. And the only thing that will take that spiritual malady away is developing a spiritual way of life. And the best way to do it is the ritual of AA. The root of the word spiritual is ritual. It's like showing up, it's shaking hands, it's setting up the chairs, it's doing all these things that we don't like to do. And for long past 4 or 5 years, just clicking on a Zoom, you know, and just being wonderful on Zoom, you know. But then you have to come down into the real world and like look people in the eye and take them to Denny's. You want to go to get something to eat? Sure. We're going to go to Denny's. Oh, God, almighty. But I'll tell you what, I believe that Denny's has saved an awful lot of people from drinking. An awful lot of people. You know, just an apple pie or a moon over my hammy or just some ice cream. We would sit there and drink coffee, bad coffee all night long, and then give them apple pie, and you get home jacked up. And you go, but the problem is always gone when we do that. So, The character defect is a behavior. It really is a behavior, and it's something that you can change. Your character defect is something that you can change. Think about that. It's not really, it's like, oh, I've got all these character defects. I must be broken. You're not broken. You learn how to live a happy, joyous, and free life. When I first got sober, everybody was reading the Jonathan Livingston Seagull book. It's a wonderful book because it's got pictures. The pictures are goofy, but it's just a simple. And everybody goes, have you read Jonathan Livingston Seagull? I'm not going to read a book about a seagull. Well, won't you? It's not about a seagull. It's about you. It's about striving. It's about learning to strive for the perfect ideal. What is that? I don't know what it is. The big book is not to be a shield. It's not, you know, because sometimes I use this as a shield to keep people away. It's supposed to be used as a mirror so I can constantly look at myself. I can uncover, discover, and discard. A friend of mine sent me a text this morning. If sometimes our life is like a dirty mirror. If you think about that, if you're looking in a dirty mirror, you're not going to see the full perspective of your soul. But if you clean that mirror off and you're looking, you're going to go, oh, wow, this is what God wanted me to be, you know. And for years, I never had a mirror in my house. For years. I don't know how long it took. For years. And then I forget, hippie Jim lived next door to me. And he said, Joe, you don't have any mirrors in the house. I go, yeah. like, I don't like the way I look. I don't like anything about me. He goes, oh, that's a terrible way to live. And I came home the next day from work, and there was a full-length mirror in my bathroom he put up on the wall. And I remember getting out of the shower, and I go, oh, my God. But I don't feel that way anymore. It's because I was afraid to look. And if you're afraid to talk, if you're afraid to let go of that secret, if you're afraid, the secret doesn't have to. I'll never forget the time Steve Chappell was at a meeting. He was talking about taking things to, returning things to Costco. Oh, my God, you got to be kidding me. There can't be another one who's afraid to return things to Costco. You know, I've got a 25 tub of mayonnaise in the back of my car that I got. I live alone. I've lived alone for years. 25 pounds of mayonnaise. But I had a lot of stuff in the car that I bought because I saw other people buying these things. Oh, this is great. You should get this. This is wonderful stuff. It's down at Costco. They got a great deal. You go down and buy it. You don't need it, you know. I used to buy almond butter. I hate almond butter. I was in Costco the other day for Roger to get some stuff, and I went by the almond butter. I go, ugh, ugh, you know. But I go, what's a pretty good price, though. That's a really good still there. It really is. It's just like, oh, well, that's a great price. And I said, I wonder if I should. No, I'm not going to take it. I'm going to leave it there. You know, no, I'm fine. Oh, my God. They're setting up the food back there, and I'm getting hungry. But I love this sixth and the seventh step. You know, it's the mystery steps, because it's like, I think a lot of people don't really fully understand it. And it's the key to fully understanding the sixth and seventh step is to listen to another human being. Get to that nugget. Get to that thing that they don't want to talk about. Get to that thing that they have the shame. They got the trauma. We don't understand a lot of these things, but when you let people be themselves and get to that point where they can actually set themselves free, when they can let go of what that is. And usually, I'll never forget, I sponsored a guy who was a gangbanger years ago, and he came over and he was tatted up, and it was just, we had nothing in common except sobriety. And he asked me to sponsor him. We were going through the steps, and he was telling me about all his trials and tribulations, literally. And then I go, whoa, back up a minute. You breezed over something there. Oh, I don't want to talk about that one. Well, we are going to talk about that one then, if you don't want to talk about what is that one about. And he started to cry. And I went, wow. And he couldn't stop crying. And I'll never forget, he goes, oh, my God, are you ashamed of me? I go, what? He goes, I've never cried in front of any other man. And he goes, I feel weak. Oh. And then I said, I believe that tears wash away the pathway to the soul. So you can get rocketed into that fourth dimension. And he said, what? I said, think about it. Because your soul is what's trying to come out. It's trying to shine. You know, we have all these things, the tattoos, the gangster symbols, the hats, the clothes, the shoes. Think about all that drag that I call, all that drag that's keeping you in that thing that you've created. You know, and then you're like the statue of David that's surrounded by marble. And what we do in here is we chip away all the excess, all the defects of character. Your sponsor helps you chip away the defects of character so you can be presented to the world as the person God wants you to be. And that's the person in the mirror. That's who we are. That's what people love. And my head is just a magic magnifying mind. When I said I can't follow June and Jimmy, that's always the way I felt all my life. I had brothers who were just successful. They could throw a football. They could play a basketball. They could run. They could jump. I didn't even know whether to kick a ball, basketball, or throw. I'll never forget the first time I went to high school, and they go, oh, my God, this is Brian Conroy's son. Brian was the captain of the football. Oh, we've got another Conroy. I didn't even know how to put a cup on. It was just so embarrassing. How do you do with this thing? I don't know what to do with it. You know, just embarrassing. I don't know what to do with this thing. I don't know what to do with it. And then we've got shoulder pads, and I went out, and I'm like just walking around like a goof, and they said, now we're going to hit the sled. I didn't know what a sled was. And I see all these people hitting the sled. I go, I can hit a sled. And I went full 100 miles an hour into that sled, not knowing it was spring-loaded, right? And the coach was up on the sled, and I hit that thing, and I went, shoom! I went right backwards. And everybody's going, oh, God, he's not Brian, is he? No, he's not. I became the manager of the passing out towels after that. I was like, but that's really the way I lived, you know, and the shame that I carried till I came into Alcoholics Anonymous was deep. It was there. That was the pomp. That's the circumstance. That's the worship of other things that we don't want to talk about. And we come in here, we share in a general way what we're like, what happened, and what we're like now. Think about that. Think about that way we talk about and how what we were like, what happened, what we are like now. Ron Nguyen, who was one of my mentors, who helped start this group, I don't know if he did, but years ago he was here, and he said, Joe, listen to people quote that every time they get up and speak. They said, we share in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I go, well, isn't that what it says? He says, no, open up the book. He says, it's sharing a general way what we were like, what happened, and what we are like now. And he says, and if you can get up and share your story, you share what you were like, what happened, and what you are like now. People won't identify with the it. If you're trying to share your it, you're separating people with your material stuff. They don't understand the it. They understand the we, the I, the seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, the defects of character, the pride, the anger, the greed, the gluttony, the envy, the lust, and the sloth. We identify with all, because those are the things that kept us in that a psychologist would call it those survival mechanisms. AA calls them defects of character or shortcomings. I like the word shortcoming because defect of character sounds like, ooh, I'm defective. No, you've got some shortcomings. You've got some expectations and some demands that never be met because of your old idea that you're not good enough, that you didn't come from the good side of the tracks, that your family, my dad died at 47. My mom lived, she was 100 years old. I don't know how she kept six kids going. My oldest brother was 18. My youngest was 5. We were never hungry. We didn't eat filet mignon. I'll never forget, my favorite food was Boston baked beans and a hot dog chopped up in little pieces. And I'll never, she'd have a pot of that 3 or 4 times a week. We were never hungry, with white bread, with butter smeared all over it. I'll never forget, when my mom passed away, my brother turned to me, he says, Joe, you know what? We were never hungry growing up. But I don't think I ever asked Mom if she was ever hungry. She always fed us first. And I think that's what happens in here, in Alcoholics Anonymous. Think about the first person that reaches out to you and says, how you doing? They're feeding you first so that they can live happy, joyous, and free. Whether I respond or not is not up to them. But I will tell you what, when I first started coming in here and there were two or 300 people in here, and all I could see was 200 or 300 people, and then that one person that would greet me at the door, that one person that would walk and talk to me on the way out, that was the person I was looking for the next day. I wasn't, the fear of that 200 or 300 people was gone. I was looking for that one person that said, hey, how you doing, Joe? I'll tell you what, that is emotional sobriety. That fourth dimension of existence can start with your first interaction with a new person in Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't have to tell them how to do it. You ask them how they're doing. And you have to sit and you have to listen. You know, oh my God, they're going to go. That was kind of a rhetorical question, but. And you're sitting there going, wow, this could take a long time. But I'll tell you what. Can you imagine if Wilson didn't make that phone call? If he didn't reach out to Dr. Bob? And if Dr. Bob didn't say, I'll give him 15 minutes. Can you imagine if that didn't happen? Wow. I'll give him 15 minutes. Hours later, Bob said, wow, he knows what he's talking about. And then they met Bill D. number 3. Same thing happened. Nah, I don't want to see anybody. And after they had a conversation, Bill D. number 3 said to his wife, these guys really know what they're talking about. They were telling what they were like, what happened, and what they're like now. They were sharing emotional sobriety from the first relationship that they had. And if you can do that, you'll get people rocketed into the fourth dimension. We become the fuel for somebody else's rocket ship. In Bill's story, he says he was catapulted in the fourth dimension of existence. And there is a solution. He talks about being rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. I think catapulted is step 6 because it's clanky, it's rough, and it's really loud. Rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence is the transformation, that process that happens, and that rocketed is that controlled ascension. Not into the space, not into the Netherlands, that controlled ascension into the here and the now. And that's what emotional sobriety is. If you can live in the now, as my sponsor says, turn that word around, you've won. If you live in the now, you've won. And right in the middle, right in that fulcrum, that's where the now is. It's not mysterious. It's right here. It's right now. And I am so thrilled that you guys are still here. We're going to eat, and we're going to go on the rest of the afternoon. Peace, everybody. Thank you.